right, so we'll begin this evening's meeting of the Finance and Facilities Committee. Today is April 23rd, 2012, and it's 6:09. Would you please take a moment to review the minutes from the April 9th meeting and let me know if they meet with your approval.
I'm good with the minutes.
Okay,
Steve?
Yes. And Dave. Okay, Lori is going to be here a little bit later this evening, so we're going to kind of move the agenda around. So the first order of business then this evening will be the food service equipment bid results. And we went out to bid for the necessary equipment, or the equipment that will be necessary when we implement the hot lunch program at each of the elementary schools. The bids came back. You have a spreadsheet attached that includes a listing of all the equipment that will be necessary for implementation. And the total price when this board report was put together was $24,274 and change. Just to let you know, we will not be needing the hand sink self-contained water system for $4,932. So and that, the reason we won't be needing it is because the
Department of Public Health has let us use them, so we reconfigured where the lines would be at the two locations that we've got needed them.
So the bid will come back at $24,002 less than $4,900.
That's under $20,000.
Under $20,000. Okay. Any questions?
Yes, I mean, my thing's slipping up, but I have a question around. I don't know all the schools that well. Is there some stuff we can use, can't use? You know, like, I know Lincoln has a sink and a counter there. I just wonder if you can explain to me, is it some facilities have it, or does it look like all of them were getting?
All of them are going to need certain types of equipment. The kitchens or the little service areas that we have in all of the elementary schools really were never intended, I don't believe they were ever intended to serve a full-blown hot lunch program. So there are certain requirements that are dictated by the public health department of things that we have to do. Now, if those facilities were originally designed to be able to handle a hot lunch program, things would have been set up much differently. But these are the bare necessities that we'll need just for initial implementation of the hot lunch program.
I just wanted to be sensitive to, you know, the Lincoln area. I think that was built after a referendum. Sometimes when things are passed, you know, thinking in the future we'd like to add this. I don't know if there's anyone here from that time that can remember anything. Just that, you know, just in case we're asked, hey, when you put this in, you were supposed to do this, that.
This is all equipment that is needed for serving hot lunches, and none of our kitchens are designed for serving a hot lunch. So, I mean, the sink, and obviously we're not going to use the sink at this point. So I'm not sure what would have been put in there,
the
Cambros, or I mean, the heated. The serving.
I know Lincoln has a stove.
Oh, no. Yeah, but you can't use those. It has to be a particular type of equipment.
Right. Yeah. No,
those are really just sort of almost like.
Those are like kitchens. It's like a PTA kitchen. It's like Churchill's. We just had a regular. Somebody donated a stove.
Right. Correct.
Yeah.
And that's not what we could use to cook a meal on anyway, according to the Department of Public Health. And so those little kitchenette areas were just more or less.
Faculty, like the luncheon, when we do a teacher appreciation lunch, stuff like that.
Function working kitchen in that respect. Mm-hmm. The issue about the sinks is that a sink has to be within 10 feet of a
server.
So where the sink is in that little kitchen area in the old, and I'm going to call it the old gym at Lincoln, is perfect because the lines can be right there and they can get there. But at Franklin, it was farther than 10 feet, but we figured out how to reconfigure opening doors. And at Churchill, we moved the line to the other side of the gym so that they can get within that range.
Okay.
So that's kind of like where it comes in. But none of those kitchens, even the one that's attached to the new gym over at Lincoln was ever meant to be a serving kitchen.
Right. Okay.
You know, it was just counter space and a little like room, and they didn't really build it for that purpose.
Yeah, that my question was just about the sinks that were there. I think you said you figured out a way to use them.
Right.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Saved $4,900.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, saved another $4,900.
Bob, I just had a quick question that I won't need to ask during the regular meeting. The NutriKids POS system, is that what came with the vendor through Marquardt, or do you already have that?
The Nutri.
Go ahead.
Yeah, you're the queen of food.
We purchased? Right, purchased an agreement with NutriKids when we went to a cashless system at Hadley.
At Hadley, so that came on
then. 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
Okay, so that's what's at Hadley now with the POS system that we're proposing that for the board to discuss tonight for board meeting is to take away that NutriKids.
Yeah.
Just replace it all across
which
the
makes
district.
Sense. Yeah.
So yeah, so NutriKids didn't come from any one place. It was a program that we went and sought out and bought 2.5 years ago, mm-hmm. and it satisfied the needs back then. But with our changes that we've made recently, yeah. it makes more sense.
I'm assuming it needs to be consistent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It helps with the family accounts and things like that.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Then the second order of business this evening will be the wireless network refresh. Mike Wood.
Thank you. Our current system for wireless was put in about 7 years ago, 2005, and it met our needs for the last 6-7 years. But we're at a point now where we have so much wireless device, so many wireless devices within our buildings that we've outgrown this infrastructure. We initially put that in. It was really only to support a couple of wireless devices that would be in that building at a given time. And now we could have as many as 10, 15, even 20 wireless devices in a single classroom, and maybe even multiple classrooms in a certain area. So we kind of hit that, our capacity that we currently have for wireless signals. And as a matter of fact, it was one of the recurring themes that came up during mine and Ann's building meeting with the building staff to talk about the reorganization was some of the frustrations that we've been having in the buildings with regards to wireless. So this proposal is to build out and reconfigure, really restructure our wireless infrastructure here to support the kind of activity and bandwidth that's going to be necessary to implement as many wireless devices as we have. So things like the netbooks, the iPads, the laptops, they'll all be wireless, people's phones. They'll all be riding on our wireless network. So we may have 10, 15, 20, even more devices than that concentrated in an area. So we need to find a solution that is going to be robust enough to handle that kind of density for wireless, but also be cost effective and something that we can continue to expand upon. So we looked at a few different solutions. HP, which is what we currently have, Procurve is their networking division of HP. We looked at Cisco and also looked at Aruba. And of the three products, we felt Aruba best fit our needs for expandability and for cost. And when we looked at how many access points we were going to need, given, again, the density of wireless that we were anticipating and that we're already experiencing in our buildings, and the construction of the building, the buildings, the design, is mainly cinder block and steel, which is very difficult for wireless to penetrate and defeat. So when we spec this out, we were really looking at an access point, a wireless access point, in pretty much every room. Certainly any large instructional space, we would outfit with an access point. So when I was out looking at pricing, I was looking at a couple things. The access point, what the capacity of that access point is and what the cost is, but also what kind of controlling unit we can implement that will help us to centrally manage and control our wireless access points, which we also don't currently have. I mean, right now we have our kind of ad hoc wireless spots within our buildings, which again are fine for a few devices, but really aren't going to manage dozens of devices that will be running on them. So we need a controller unit as well, so we can centrally manage it, configure it, but also be able to isolate that from a lot of the other interference and noise that goes on in our buildings, even from outside our buildings, that can cause conflicts with our wireless signal. And Aruba offers both of those. So when we looked at pricing, contacted a couple of different vendors. We met with Heartland Business Solutions, it's a company we've done business with for years, mm-hmm. And Tiger Direct, also another reseller of Aruba equipment. And pricing was pretty similar. The big difference between the two vendors was for installation. Heartland will install all of the access points, take care of any of the wiring, but they'll also configure our controlling unit and the access points for us with the installation costs, where Tiger Direct would only be able to do the physical installation of the access points and the wiring. We would be responsible for the configuration part of it. So there's a slight difference, about $350 between the two. But I felt for the value we were getting from the configuration of the access points and the controller units, Heartland was the vendor that we were going to recommend for this project. So we would purchase the access points and the hardware on a five-year lease. It would be a dollar buyout lease. So at the end of that 5 years, we would own and keep that equipment. I would anticipate this equipment lasting anywhere between 8 to 10 years for us before we really have to look at refreshing that. It is the most current standard in wireless. It's the wireless end standard. It offers up to 300 mega bandwidth as opposed to the 54 mega bandwidth that we're currently getting with our HP solution that's in the building. So that should handle the density that we're going to see and experience. This proposal is to outfit all buildings, all six buildings in the district with completely new wireless access points. We'd be looking at three controller units that would allow us for, I believe it's 128 access points are configurable on a single controller unit. With the three, it will allow us the extra, because I think we've got 160 that we need total throughout the district. But it would also offer us some redundancy with that third controller unit. If we were to lose a controller unit, we can quickly switch over and keep the district up and running on wireless. So. One thing to keep in mind that with these last two rollouts, last year at Hadley and this year's proposal for the grade schools, we're going to have more wireless devices riding on our network than we were wired. So I thought it was important that whatever the solution we invest in, that it was one, first of all, it would benefit the whole district and we'd be able to roll it out to the whole district right away. But also that it was going to be something that was going to last for us for another 8 to 10 years. And we believe this solution will do that for us. So any questions about that? That's a lot to have to process for wireless stuff.
You said the lifespan is 8 to 10 years and we'll own this after five, but also expansion. Rule of thumb, sometimes when you build, you walk in and you're already 85% capacity. Is there a certain percentage in terms of purchasing this kind of...
Well, we did as many as 128 access points per controller unit. We'd have three controller units. So okay. We'd still have that ability to expand. Mm-hmm. One of the other things that
That's satisfactory to you knowing kind of where we're going.
Yeah. One of the things about wireless access points is really just by concentrating more in one area doesn't necessarily mean you're going to get better coverage. As a matter of fact, a lot of times you could run into problems by doing that. So. Even if I were to put two access points in the room, I may have an issue with that. It doesn't always guarantee that you're going to get greater capacity in that room. So based on what we've got in place right now and what we're anticipating coming in within the next two to five years, we can expand enough to be able to support that. Mm-hmm. And so, yes, I do believe we could do that. One thing that I do want to note in the board report is we also need to have these plugged back into our core switches, the HP switches that we've gotten a few years ago. Mm-hmm. And those we are kind of hitting capacity on. So what we'll need to do is expand those, and that's really just a snap-in component that goes into the existing switch. And it's just a port to be able to plug in the access point. So when the access point is in a room, there's got to be a wire run back to our switching equipment, and from there we plug it into the core switch. So we will... need to get at least one more of those blades per building, so it would be at least five that we would need, and then that would give us the capacity on our core end in each building to be able to support that. Mm-hmm. And we still have available slots in our existing equipment, so if we needed to get more of those snap-in blades, we could to be able to support it. So yes, I do see this being an effective solution for at least the next 8 years.
I was trying to remember. For some reason, I thought we added some wireless points last year when we added all the networks. So
we
going to be replacing those or adding to those, or how will all those fit in?
We did. And when last year when we rolled out all the netbooks at Hadley, we already knew we pretty much hit the wall for wireless capacity in our building. So, and we wouldn't be able to completely redesign our wireless network last summer with everything that we already had going. So what we did is we kind of plugged in some consumer level access points, TrendNet. I think we spent about $3,000 to do that. And that was mainly just to try to keep Hadley up and running for at least one more year on wireless. Which on our part has required a lot of support and putting out fires in the building, but it has managed to keep the wireless up and running in that building, at least for this year. So it was more of a stopgap to get us to this point where we can replace it with a true enterprise solution for wireless here.
Will those consumer level remain in the building?
In some places they will. We'll repurpose those in some of the areas that wouldn't be heavily used for instruction, or we might not see a lot of wireless, and also where we might need just sort of an ad hoc kind of a wireless hotspot, if you will. So, you know, places like the Hadley Courtyard, for instance, if we needed to just get a quick hotspot, we could put them in there. They can also travel with some of the carts to places like the gymnasiums or the multi-purpose rooms. So we would continue to utilize those as best we could. We just wouldn't rely on them as heavily to carry them over.
Mm-hmm. Well, how many users per AP?
It says 64. It's 64 is the default. I would expect it to do more than 64, at least one access point. So
per channel.
Per channel, right? I'm sorry, because it's a dual channel. These are dual channel access points.
Right. Well, they're dual band, mm-hmm. but it's only transmitting, receiving on one channel, I think. And that's where you want the channels far enough apart that are going to overlap. Right?
Well,
that's where you get.
Right, but the controller unit will kind of handle a lot of that for us, so we don't have to manually handle how
it'll detect.
Right.
It'll listen for the other ones.
Right. Well, they're all kind of aware of each other.
Right.
So right now, what we've got is more, like I say, an ad hoc sort of hotspot.
Right.
So the other access points aren't aware that there are, you know, similar devices around them. And that's where we'll run into that overlap of channels, as well as being able to function at the 5 megahertz signal, the gigahertz signal, rather than the 2.4, which we also find a lot of conflicts with. So it's in so many devices.
So what 5 gigahertz devices do you have besides the iPad? Are the iPad 2s 5 gigahertz?
The only thing we've run into trouble with on the 5 gigahertz has been the netbooks we've gotten last year. Everything else is compatible. Everything else that we've tested that we currently know is compatible with that. And functions very nicely with that.
Okay. But I'm just meaning in terms of load balancing, some things don't need 5. I'm just saying if you want to share, are you going to set up the endpoints? The iPads just only use certain bands?
No, we generally left them in mixed mode to allow for other bands. And that's something that we'll have to see how well that works, whether or not we really do need to isolate it to that single band. But at least for right now, because we probably will function on 5 rather than the 2.4. And because of reliability and also even just being in some of the portable units, you'll pick up interference from the neighbors. Mm-hmm. You'll see a lot of the neighbors at
right.
these points, and we run into some interference there. So definitely any areas in the building where we know we're going to get some bleed through from some of the residential, mm-hmm. we probably run those on 5 just because we have a lot less likelihood of a conflict mm-hmm. until the consumer market catches up to that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is 5 isn't as good at penetrating. The higher the frequencies.
Right, but really I don't think, even at 2.4, we're having no luck with it penetrating some of the walls, with the exception of the triangle, since that's an older building and it's not all center block and steel.
For the phone curves, powered via power over Ethernet?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, so you're just going to switch out, or are you moving with locations of the new switches?
Well, probably we're going to move them a little bit. In the past, we put them up in the black boxes, which, you know, gets a little, you're going to get a little interference there anyway. But with these newer access points, they've got the design where they're built to snap right into your ceiling.
Yeah, that's what it looked like, but antennas,
there's nothing around
about it. Yeah.
It's just a round box. There's no antennas.
Well, that's what I mean. The way the antennas are configured in the box, mm-hmm. they're set up to go on the ceiling.
Right, but you can also form the bandwidth frequency with the controller unit, so we can control that. The other upside by putting up the ceiling tiles is most every room is also equipped with a network drop that's elevated. So when they snap it in, all they really have to do is run a cable, plug it into that jack, right, and then we're writing the 1 gig port back to our core switch. So most everything is in place already. The only thing we really need to have them do is snap in that access point and run the cable to the existing drop.
And then patch them in. The classrooms do we have in the district?
Mm-hmm. 188 classrooms total in the district. Okay. I didn't configure for all 188. Some of them are meeting areas, some of them are office spaces, but any large instructional space, we would plan on putting an access point in that room.
This is maybe a leap, but I'm just thinking about some of the concerns that faculty have had about troubleshooting their technology through the conversations about reorganization. So as we ramp out, roll out our final smart board, do you see this also as being a way to kind of mitigate some of the concern around that, that in fact this will uptick reliability, maybe less concern for teachers? I mean, I see some of these conversations plugging in together, and probably important for us to communicate some of that as well, that some of this is infrastructure.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that Ann and I definitely noticed when we went through the tours is a lot of the concerns really revolved around weak wireless signal and the fact that we've outgrown the capacity for the current infrastructure. Mm-hmm. So as we were moving forward, our plan is to be more proactive and dealing with these issues that we know are coming, and we know we're gonna need to
address. Let's get ahead of them.
And we're kind of a little behind this one. So this is a proposal to get us up to speed so we can support the level of equipment that's coming in, even with people bringing in their own devices.
Right.
Teachers, the staff want to bring in their own iPhones or their tablets or even their laptops. Mm-hmm. And it's a way to be able to support that as well, because we can also have a network that taps into our back-end network and gives you all the regular services that you would normally get. Mm-hmm. But also a separate network that's more of a hotspot where you're going to get wireless and you get on the internet, but you will not get access to our back-end services. So for people that are coming in to present, or even staff members that would like to bring in their own devices, it'll make it a lot easier for them to do it really without any real support necessary. And of course, yes, we want to have as reliable the wireless signal as we can have in our homes. All of the wireless devices that we are implementing.
Yeah. There's no turning back. We're there. We are there. Yeah,
that's right. Okay, and just a quick question in terms of the safety of the data and the information. You said that people that bring their own devices from outside can connect to the internet, but they wouldn't have access to other.
Right. Well, we have two separate networks. I mean, one network would be our regular network, and that is controlled and secured by a passcode. So unless you have that passcode, you won't get access to the other resources on our network. Getting access to the internet is a pretty routine kind of connection. I mean, anywhere you go, if you go to Starbucks or pretty much any place, that's free Wi-Fi now. So it would be the same kind of situation.
Okay.
You'd still get access to the internet, but you wouldn't get access to things like our Skyward system or our email system or our shared folders and drives. You wouldn't have access to those sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Anything else? I'm just curious about the licensing for the software, why there's such a big difference.
Because of the way they bundled it. When I spoke to Heartland and we were dealing directly with Aruba, the rep there bundled the licensing. So by bundling it, and I think it's in packs of 32. So he bundled 264 and then I think another 32, which gave us a reduced price. Where when Tire Direct came to us, they pretty much just gave us straight licensing across the board as if you would order 160 licenses separately. So that's where we got the price breakdown on that.
Would you ever not get software for the AP? I guess I don't understand why software separate.
Yeah, there was a whole bundle of software that they proposed, firewall security software. Those I did not include, but we do have to still pay an annual licensing fee for the access point and its communication back to the controller. So that's the one licensing fee we will pay, and that will be a recurring cost. I did not opt for things like the security or the advanced firewall, because we do all that behind the scenes already.
Right.
We already got a firewall and security levels that we already employ. So those I did not include in that.
Okay. Yeah, it just seemed weird.
I had to call
the license from Tiger Direct.
Yeah, I had to call and ask him about how that worked too, because the Aruba rep was able to bundle those licenses for us, so our initial cost would be less.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah, I still. But did you tell Heartland that they were offered for 55 of a seat versus the?
Did I tell Tiger to write?
Well, I understand. Okay, what is it? So you're getting...
It was cheaper with...
Oh, it was cheaper with Heartland. Okay, yeah. Sorry. I saw the one and the two and the 160.
No, yeah, it came as cheaper.
Much cheaper.
Oh, okay. What are you going to do with the old ones?
The four times? Or the... I'm sorry.
The Prolongers, yeah. What did you pay for
those? We got those. I think they were about the same cost. I think they were $424, and it's a long time ago. So I know they were over $400, but... I was actually thinking about donating those because I don't know that we really have much use for those. Being that it's still the G standard at only 54 meg, and we have so many of them, I was really going to look to donate those rather than hang on to them and utilize them. Whereas the trend nets that we had gotten last year function on the same standard, so we can still snap those in certain environments and still get some use out of them. I don't see us getting a whole lot of use out of them.
No, not because we keep them. I just didn't know if they had any value.
Not much.
I saw they were going for like $20 or $30 on eBay.
Yeah, that's about right.
That won't be done.
But I still would think I would still think you'd use G9 a 2 and a 4, 4 and 5 both. So,
well, so far in our testing we've had good success on strictly every 5 gigs, so when we snap it in this summer, we'll definitely test again. But the only devices we ran into any issues with that are district devices would be the networks we had gotten from the previous year. So one of the proposals for the computer rollout would be to take those networks, bring them into the library, and then within those library areas, we can control that frequency setting, so we can at least still utilize those networks within that area without completely restructuring the wireless out in the classrooms to support just that.
Are the new PACE systems for the grade schools lunch, is that wired or wireless?
I'm sorry, which systems?
Registered.
Point of service.
The data.
Well, those will just be desktops that we'll have back somewhere within the multipurpose room or somewhere close by where they're doing the lunch service. And they're not going to actually use those until lunch is over. So when lunch is over, they'll go back and they'll scan in the student's card on the desktop. We're just going to repurpose some of the PCs that we're replacing from the grade school rollout, because we still have some that are very serviceable for a few more years. We'll upgrade the memory on those and get those up so we can get another year or two out of them, and we'll utilize those for that, since that's really the only thing that we'll use those computers for.
Okay, then we're going to move on to the next order of business. Then it'll be the annual employee medical and dental insurance renewal. Just a little background: last week, Lauren and I attended the meeting with EBC, and they gave us our final renewal rates for the coming school year. So, Lauren,
we have two other handouts for you. One is just, and Erica and Stevie probably know about this. It's just background about EBC for those of you who aren't familiar with it. It's just a one-page summary of what the cooperative is. And then that appendix or exhibit one on our black and white copy turned out a little funky, so we've got a color copy showing you the banding. What's kind of interesting about this exhibit is it shows you the number of districts that are in each of the bands. Thank you. So, and I thought this would be helpful. So we have good news. Our loss ratio in terms of PPO this year, actually that's not the good news, it's 89.9% or slightly under 90%, but this is where the cooperative has really helped us. We have a renewal rate for the PPO of 2.8% for this year. And for the HMO, 1.8%, and for dental, a decrease of 1%. What happens this year with our plan and with the cooperative in general, the cooperative as a whole, their average increase, I believe, was 3.8% on the PPO. It actually was 5.8%, but a decision was made by the EBC board to use cash reserves to buy down the rate this year for all districts. So all districts in the cooperative saw a lesser increase than they would have based on the performance of the plan, but based on what they had in working cash reserves. So that was really helpful to us. If you look at previous years for us, when we've run like a 91 or 92% loss ratio in the PPO, we were looking at double-digit increases. Mm-hmm. So this is good news from our standpoint. Bob and I received this information last week. We're headed out starting Wednesday morning to open enrollment presentations in the schools. Our IR team tomorrow afternoon will be sharing, or at least talking to them about this information. We sent it out on Friday, so mm-hmm. at least they had it in advance. But we're very pleased with the information we have to share with you today. There's no need to take action because we're a part of the pool until next year, and then a decision will be made whether we continue with the cooperative or not. Mm-hmm.
What is the rate adjustment? So the rate adjustment is what they say, District 41, here's your rate per person, employer, group, and then we, through our contract, split it up according to the percentage.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So when do we do that? That exercise is next.
That's part of negotiations. If you're talking about the cost sharing.
Oh, no, I meant the new rates, because every year, don't you adjust? You adjust. Or is it just
the
a
premium.
Medical exercise based on?
Yeah.
And Phyllis has done that for us, actually,
right.
already.
Okay.
That's part of what we share with staff
okay.
at open enrollment. But as we do our presentation, I mean, clearly we'll be sharing information to AFSCME, but the information that we'll be sharing with SCIA is based on what we have right now, letting them know that, you know, negotiations are underway, could change, couldn't change, don't know, had to have something to share with you, so mm-hmm. we have.
Mm-hmm. But the monthly premium won't change, it's just a split. Based on negotiation.
So the
split won't change. It's just the amount of the premium.
I'm talking about the percentage.
That doesn't change.
Okay.
Right?
That may or may not change based on negotiations.
Oh, based on negotiations. Right. Okay.
Right.
I thought you meant based on the increase here.
No.
Yeah.
Based on negotiations.
Yeah.
And so, when you talk about the new Affordable Care Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're talking about the Cadillac provisions.
Right.
That is related to the amount the employer pays versus the employee. It would have there's nothing as a part of this cooperative that would impact that.
Well, it could. We have to, it's a few years out. We have to take a look at our plan specifications and our coverage levels and how much it costs. That's something that we've been working with Gallagher on in terms of, you know, looking forward. And right now, so much is still in flux with the Affordable Care Act that, you know, who knows what's going to happen relative to that. So we're, you know, I think that'll be potentially a conversation that we have through negotiations as we do an analysis of that. But this renewal, last year we had some costs that were attributable to compliance with the Affordable Care Act, but this year there are no costs attributed to that.
So I'm just talking about the EDC. There wouldn't be anything that, like, if a certain percentage of members get hit with penalties.
Oh, I see.
That then they say
everybody
has to.
I don't know. Yeah, I can't answer that.
Well, I would guess not, because your plans are individual.
Right. All of our plans are individual, and I would say probably we would pay for our own penalties. I'm guessing that's how they do it.
Mm-hmm.
They've been pretty. I mean, the nice part about the department is everybody can have their own plan based on what you negotiate with your bargaining unit, but you share the risk, and you share some of the cost.
So far, still seems like a good idea.
It's just phenomenal.
I mean, based
on the budget that you sent for us to review, you had projected, what, an 8% and 5%, something like that? So.
Well, and that's what the preliminary rates had been, but
right.
They shared at the board meeting last week that they did do some negotiating with Gallagher on their service agreement and got Gallagher to reduce their consulting fees by 20%, signed new contracts with them, and then also did an analysis of some of the claims that had come through.
The last 2 years, they have chosen to use reserves to help defray the increase.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that they have a history of doing, or is that something that they've only done in the last 2 years?
Actually, they didn't do it last year or the year that we... They did it the year that we joined, but we didn't reap the benefits of that. Last year, they didn't. In fact, what we did instead was approved the use of Business Solver, which is a third-party system where you can put all of your enrollment information and get it organized where it automatically feeds into Blue Cross and into MetLife. So we manage that here, but they did, I don't believe, they bought down the rates last year, but they did this year.
I thought they did last year.
No, but they did the year that we were joining the cooperative, but again, we couldn't benefit from that because we were coming in as a new group and they had to rate us based on where we were.
Did they tell you why they decided to use reserves?
To help feed the
so that was the that was
and they felt that the reserve, I mean, that they were in good shape from in the working cash fund that they used, from a working cash standpoint.
I know Case was really pleased as well. Case?
It was a happy meeting. It's always good to be in a happy meeting about a chair.
No, this is great.
And especially if
they're going up and
CPS?
They're pressing all the teachers to get out of the PPO.
Oh, in West Chicago?
Oh, yeah. Real, a lot of pressure.
Are they a part of the
person can go in it, and anyone who has it, they have to come in and like talk to the administrator about it.
Are they a part of EBC or no?
Oh, yeah.
They are?
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
That's probably how they're managing their plan.
Yeah.
But it's good they've come out, you know, with an 89% loss ratio.
Yes. Yeah. 89 is better than we thought.
89.9.
Yeah. And it's a little better than we thought. In our preliminary, we thought we were... Do we attribute that to anything?
Well, I mean, we have always have a sense of what's coming through in terms of FMLA leave. So...
And the other good thing is they're retaining Blue Cross Blue Shield, so
Is there anything in the district we should be doing to improve our numbers?
Well, we're doing some work already with a pretty active employee run group. We have encouraged participation in the health risk assessment screening that was done in January. We had like over almost a 50% increase in participation with that, and that information will feed into our wellness committee and so that we can strategize and put together targeted programs. We have done a couple wellness programs this year in terms of physical exercise with our staff. So we'll meet with the wellness consultant from Gallagher again in May with our employee wellness group to figure out what our plan is going to be for next year. So there's so much, only so much you can do, but I feel like we've been putting that up at the front and putting some effort into wellness.
Well, we had a huge participation in the Walking Works program, which was based in the wellness initiative. And there is some disagreement about whether or not wellness programs really do make a difference. And I was reading that as part of my husband's healthcare stuff. And so that is, I think the bottom line is you want to do it even from a mental health standpoint, just in terms of people knowing that they can get smoking cessation and doing those kind of things when they want to access that. So I'm not sure it's, I don't think it's a bad thing. I don't know that if you can show a percentage.
It's hard to draw one-to-one.
But the fact that our district is much more conscious of the conversation and aware that it does play into cost and that type of thing.
Well, I mean, even our food service, provider, I mean, they are extremely health conscious. And, of course, the new federal guidelines are. So if nothing else, I mean, you're raising the awareness level of your staff to healthy eating, healthy
and
exercise,
modeling that,
and taking care of yourself. And, I would agree with you. You can't prevent, some of the major illnesses that can beset an organization, nor, the normal course of claims that you have, including young families that touch have children.
Lots of cost. But congratulations.
Nice job.
It's great.
Got the good news.
This is helpful to the overview. Mm-hmm. So have all board members said that. Well, let me say this. While you say you haven't done anything, that's not quite true. Both of you, you know, and Phyllis have monitored the health performance and even regulating, and just the oversight to our insurance program has been very, very good. Mm-hmm. All three of you have paid close attention to it, so that's helpful.
Any other questions? So then the final item that's on the agenda this evening will be the Finance Advisory Committee.
I want to thank Drew for giving me names of people who might serve on the committee, and I think at our last meeting we talked a little bit about the charge, and everyone seemed to be somewhat comfortable with that. So, you know, really all that's left to do at this point is identify people and make a call to them. Drew, I think you gave me six names or five names.
I think it was five.
Five names. Which I left on my desk. Okay. Okay, and Steve, do you have any names? Okay, if you can send me those names, then, you know, we can begin to make some calls to people. I mean, I don't know if you want to talk about those names in a meeting. I could certainly, you know, we could share the names that you've suggested. You know, as I said, my only hesitancy was, you know, we are in a public forum, and these people don't know that we're even thinking about them unless right. You've contacted them. And
I have not. I have not.
Might be a surprise if they should.
Well, I talked to a couple people just to gauge their interest, but one did ask me for the charge, and I couldn't find. I didn't know if there would be ahead of the summer. I mean, I know we talked about it last meeting, mm-hmm. but we didn't send any. I don't think that was in the notes.
In the notes.
Or if you just had something. Then I could share it and they could give me the thumbs up or thumbs down.
Right. The finance committee charge was not articulated in our minutes. I can go back to my notes.
It was a handout that the committee got at the last meeting. I have it downstairs. You had typed something.
Yeah, I did type something out. Would you want me to go back and get that? I did
you
hand
mean
that
this?
Up. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Yeah. We can make a copy.
We can, yeah, I can. We can get you another copy, Dan. And we talked about two summer meetings. Is that comfortable for everybody?
No, I think that's. And is that comfortable for staff?
Yeah, well, that'll be the challenge, is making sure we have two people here. Well, we even thought, depending on the people, maybe we'd have an opportunity to schedule it during the day. You know, some people might have flexibility to do a lunch meeting. So once we identify the group, then timing will be, you know, we'll find a time that's mutually acceptable to everybody. And, you know, we all like to take July as a breather, but it may be that we... You know, you have a meeting and might end up being in July.
Middle of the day would work for me, so okay. Given enough free time.
Okay. Okay, then we'll just, Dan, if you'll email me the names, and what I'll do is then I'll send the whole thing back out to you, the charge and the names. You let me know your opinions, if you have any, of the people that I've identified, and there'll be some other people that I'll identify too. So we'll have to narrow the field probably down to about five or six, and no more than eight, I think we said, right? No more than eight. That's it. We'll try and set, then once we'll contact those people, and you know, what we'll do is set an introductory meeting and then set the work agenda and the meeting schedule with them so that everyone has a chance to participate rather than just dictating those times.
That's
so again, it's kind of a think tank. You don't have that think tank concept, I think, yes. As well as, you know, reviewing. They're not going to be a decision-making body. They're not going to be oversight. but really
recommendations.
Yeah, insights. They'll provide insights and ideas, you know, bring diverse perspectives. We also hope that in the course of this group's coming together that they will feel as though they can serve as ambassadors for the district as it relates to our finances and how we're supporting our work with the resources that we're given.
Any other questions on that? Any other questions or topics you'd like to discuss this evening? We have about a half hour left.
Can I talk about the budget?
Sure.
Next year's budget specifically or budgeting in general?
Well, Joe, just Bob presented us with this this budget, and I thought it would be nice to go through it at the end.
It's not on here. It's not loaded on here, is it?
No, you sent it as part of your Thursday.
Thursday letter, and I didn't bring a copy of it in, so it's not part of our packet.
All right, do you have specific questions you'd like to ask through, or?
No, I thought you could.
Any highlights?
Yeah, give us an overview. Give us your thoughts about the budget.
Sure. Well, you're down and dirty. I wasn't prepared to do anything, but I've read it, so I guess I should be able to speak to it. So, do you have copies of the budget and the write up?
I have one here. I can make
some too. So, yeah, Dan, do you have one with you, or Steve, Eric?
I don't know.
You have yours, Erica?
I do.
I'll make five quick copies. Okay.
You can pull it up.
Oh, is it online?
It's
can we get to board docs?
I'm sorry?
Can I get to board docs from here?
Yes, we can.
I'll make a copy.
It's
just bigboard.org/board docs. You'll have to log in, but...
Oh, okay. And then go to Thursday letter, because it was a part of the Thursday letter.
Yeah,
it was
part of the Thursday letter. Mm-hmm.
I know you do. It's my favorite letter. Thursday letter. A little slow. Oh, it's so telling me I can't get it.
Phyllis is making some copies, so okay. Just give us a second. We'll and what I'll do is I'll just run through the highlights that were, I presented a cover letter with that, so I thought we'll just kind of walk through that.
Okay.
And of course, any questions you may have, be happy to try to answer them. We are going to be presenting this at the board meeting on the 14th of May. So we'll go through a formal presentation. Again, this is the preliminary budget. We'll bring back a tentative budget to you in June with some updates if we know them at that time. And then, thank you. And then finally, we'll be prepared to present this to the board for adoption, and usually the second meeting in August.
Okay.
So Phyllis is making copies. She should be with us in just a moment.
Talk about
yourself. Now, I saw in that article about the district portion of pension payments, and they had asked all the house managers what it would cost their district.
Oh.
Have you calculated that?
Yeah, we. I thought you
said about a 1.8, right?
Yeah, 1.8 million. If it were the 8.5% or 8% contribution. But I think most of you probably heard that Governor Quinn came out with his address on pension cost late last week. I guess it was Thursday or Friday. Mm-hmm. I didn't see anything in particular where they were going to pass down costs. At this point in time, they're talking about additional contributions from employees and raising the retirement age to 67 and just different things like that. So I think that conversation is still being floated out there. It looks like it's primarily a Democrat proposal at this time. But, you know, these are the types of things that just seem to pop up, and we're expected to be able to react to almost on a spur of the moment. So I haven't heard anything particular at this time.
I was saying, even if they push the retirement age to 67, there's still some model you have to run, saying it will pay in higher salaries for 2 years versus bringing in, you know, there's still some added cost to that. Granted, the pension system, it's not going to, but I got to believe keeping an older teacher, a teacher at the top end of the salary scale, extra 2 years is going to add some cost versus bringing in a newer, starting teacher.
And not only just those 2 years.
Thanks,
you know, you have teachers now that retire, that can retire after 34 years of service and are 55 years old, versus pushing it up to 67 years of age. So, I don't know what to say except for what the facts are as they've been presented by the governor at this point in time. And again,
well, the bottom line is we're going to pay for more. One way or the other, individuals will pay for more, I presume, by the end of the session, and then next, districts will pay for more.
The only way to tax relief, instead of just squeezing the balloon between local and state, is to have the individuals contribute more. There's no way around it.
No.
That was well, the legislature trying to pass the cost on to the local school boards who would just raise local property tax.
That's it. You know, and I find it.
That's the pushback. It's just shifting it.
It's up from the state to the local level. And then the other thing is, I don't care my soapbox, but you know, the governor proposed, I believe, like a 67% increase personal income tax a couple of years ago. And that's supposedly haven't done anything to resolve the ongoing issues with a number of other areas of concern in the state budget. So. It's not my job, but who knows what's
going to
happen with the politics in the state of
Illinois. If pension liability was shifted back to the local district, that's not reflected in this budget.
No.
So that would affect the budget with an additional. Additional deficit of 1.8.
Whatever that number turns out to be. And remember, they're talking somewhere between zero and it's something in excess of 8%. They're talking about phasing it in over a number of years. So, you know, maybe 20% next year, 2% year dry. You know, we really don't know, and nor can we really realistically anticipate what can occur out there given the number of conversations that are occurring. No one has come out and said A, B, or C is going to happen. Everybody's just floating different proposals, probably to see what the reaction is going to be, and then we'll be stuck or left to deal with it at that time.
Well, I mean, I think everyone, once something is done, and I am convinced something will be done this spring, but in terms of passing along that expense to school districts for FY13, the state also knows that in the code we have legal obligations in terms of reduction of staff. And so trying to implement something that would undermine the fiscal viability of many, many districts just can't be implemented next year. I think that the hue and cry on that one would be pretty loud, and because you're beyond the date when you can release staff in order to accommodate that kind of an expenditure. So my guess is, you know, as Bob said, it's going to be phased in, or at least delayed for a year before that implementation. But they could start charging individuals their contribution immediately.
Right, that's the one thing I was saying. If analysis has been done on every individual district's contract, state's the one who say, we're not going to pick this up. There's nothing that says the school districts have to pay it. I mean, is it up to an individual school district to go in and say, we're not going to pay this, we're just going to pass the cost along to the individual teacher and double what their retirement costs are?
No, there's...
the contracts state that some other government entity has to pay half of the pension?
Well, there's a pension contribution for the individual and for the school district and for the state. The state abdicates its responsibility on its contribution. Then it's a question of how is that going to be manifested and how is that going to be picked up. But we can't say we're no longer going to contribute. That's not an option.
Well, I'm just saying, I thought that the individual's paying about 8-something, right?
9.4.
And the district's paying?
0.58.
I thought it was more than that.
No.
And then what's the state paying?
Whatever they want to when they have cash in the bank.
But then what are we
Nobody
talking
really
about?
Nobody really knows that number. That's the problem.
But when we looked at comparative district salary schedules. There were districts around here that paid it was an extra 8%.
Well, but that is their choice.
That's a negotiation.
But it wasn't point something. It was
no.
Obligation to for us to pay in addition to that 8.4 or 9.4.
I believe, like Lombard 44, they pay that contribution on behalf of their teachers.
To 9.4.
So they
plus the point.
Correct.
Plus.
So they have two salary schedules out there. Their sort of net schedule in terms of what the teacher actually receives and then what would be that imputed figure, which is the salary plus the district's contribution on behalf of the teacher.
Of the 9.4.
Okay. So a district could go to their negotiating team and say, we can no longer pay your, or we won't pay the additional 3%, or we won't, you know.
Right. By some percent there.
But they can't do the 0.58.
Because the
0.58, it adds up to 1.7 million.
No.
Okay.
No. And that's the difference. That's the difference between the 9.7 and the 0.58 is the approximate 1.7, 1.8 million.
Mm-hmm. That we're talking about.
That we're talking about. And please, those are very, very round numbers that.
And as you said, it's right now 0 to 60, or, you know, in terms of where they're laying.
The pension plans have within the pension plan structure, there is an employee share and an employer share.
Right.
And so, you know, the 9.4 is the employee share that we've talked about, that some districts do pick up. But what the problem we have is when they start talking about passing this back to the employers, nobody knows what that number is going to be. We've heard it's going to be 9.5. It could be the 24% that supposedly is what we show on our budget as the on behalf payment, which is supposedly what the state share is. I mean, it's a number between 0 and something. So that's where those numbers get really confusing. Okay. But the plans actually have specific, this is the employee share, this is the employer share.
Some reason I thought ours was like 5%. You know, I always knew it was 9 something for the employee, but I thought we always had to kick in like 5%.
0.58. Mm-hmm. And then, and then there's the THIS contribution, which is 0.66 or 0.68 or something like that. Mm-hmm.
And the state picks up everything. The state theoretically picks up everything else.
So right now, the district does not make.
In theory, as you said.
In theory.
And the 0.58 employer contribution actually came out when they recalculated the formula for TRS. That's why it's called the 2.2. You know, that was the employer share. That 0.58 came out so that they could fund changing the retirement calculation. So it's 2.2% per year worked is how you earn your pension from TRS. It used to be a sliding scale. 1 to 6 years was this percentage, 6 to something was that percentage, and they flattened it out so that every year is worth 2.2%. Well, that costs money. Mm-hmm. And so they said, okay, employer, you have to now kick in. So that's where that employer share came from. It wasn't even on the books back then. I think that came in late 90s. So, I mean, so that's even relatively new if you really think about it. So, it's, you know, just some history. Mm-hmm.
No, it's been good.
But that you explained the 2.2 in a way that is not, I mean, TRS doesn't explain it very well.
Yeah. That's what the 2.2 means, is that for every year you work, you're earning 2.2% to get to the maximum percentage, which you don't achieve until 35 years or, however
you make
on
yours.
But that's what it was. That's what the
2.2 means. So, any other questions on pension costs? So, as I said, it wasn't my intention to do a presentation this evening, but I can certainly walk you through the documents that you have in front of you. As I said previously, this is the very preliminary budget. We are due to present this at the board meeting on May 14th. We'll bring it back to the board to allow us to post this document for a period of not less than 30 days at the second board meeting in June, and then we typically bring it back to the board for adoption at the second meeting in August. So, you have a two-page synopsis of basically how this budget is built around the long-range plan and the educational operational priorities associated with it, along with our vision of the 21st century classroom. We've discussed that, and then I have an overview of generally just the large number, revenues and expenditures, property taxes, other revenue, and so forth. Page 3 of that document is the difference in revenue changes from last year to this year. I can briefly just go over those. Last year's revenue budget was adopted at $45.9 million. This year we will experience about approximately a $1.8 million reduction in the receipt of personal property taxes. That is a result of the abatement of the bond and interest fund that the board decided to do back in December. Overall, we would have expected to receive something around a $900,000 increase this year. Couple that with the $2.7 million abatement of being bond and interest fund, comes to an overall reduction in property taxes of approximately $1.8 million. The corporate personal property replacement taxes, they're essentially held even with a slight increase of about $57,000. Interest earnings, as you know, we are continuing to experience, I guess, what is no longer historical, but rather seems to be the basic trend over the past few years with regards to interest rates. We're gaining something of about less than 0.5% on most of our investments. So we reduced that amount by $53,000. Other local revenue, which is food service, student fees, and things of that nature, we increased $94,000. I wanted to talk to you briefly about general state aid. In this budget, it's flat with next year, but I'll tell you what Phyllis and I are hearing through our professional organization is that there will be a proration this year that we have still not seen, but we expect to only receive 21 of the 22 payments, which for most districts in the state of Illinois will represent about a 5% reduction in general state aid for the current fiscal year. Now, we're hearing that there will also be an additional 5% reduction in general state aid for the next fiscal year that's incorporated in this budget. But I don't have any solid information on that yet, so we'll make those changes. Probably, if we hear something substantive, we would make those changes in the June budget when we present it at that time. Mm-hmm. Special education, I've held flat because we really haven't heard any other information on that. Transportation, we actually increased because last year I did not budget enough in special education transportation. Now we've eliminated the regular education transportation, which really is minor anyways. I think something under $25,000.
$16,000
is what we received for a program that costs $600,000 a year to run. And then if you're reading some of your updates that are coming through, the state is talking about removing the mandated requirement for school districts to provide transportation for its regular education students. So who knows where that's going to go. It looks like the state will abdicate its responsibility, though, for providing for reimbursement for regular education.
Transportation.
Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, transportation. So that's probably something that's going to go away. Mm-hmm. Not just for us, but for everyone.
Yeah, there was I think in the Herald, there was an article kind of collapsing a lot of the stuff going on in Springfield, and that a couple of the school districts weighed in about concerns then around increased traffic safety. I mean, you just shift the issue to another level if, parents will not. There's a district, I think, north, is it Round Lake? I forget which one, but they already make or require payment for school bus to the tune of Mount Prospect does?
Yeah.
$450, something like that.
Addison, over there?
Yeah.
They charge for all their kids for transportation.
Yeah.
And they've noticed that the kids aren't riding the bus.
And they're not riding the bus, right? So it's this quagmire.
Well, the state keeps removing its responsibility and kind of pushes it down to another level, more to a local level.
Yeah.
Pre-K at risk, we increased by $36,000. I think that was for the baby and me program, right?
We didn't budget that.
Birth to three program.
It wasn't. We didn't have those budgets. Those numbers in the budget when we adopted the budget. Mm-hmm. All the funding. So this just reflects the money you get for that one component.
The reading improvement and ADA safety block grants. We didn't get anything this year. Meaning the current fiscal year, we're We're not going to get any next year. Mm-hmm. Some other miscellaneous state revenue. And then other revenue, we've projected to increase about $22,000 to get down to projected revenues for this year of $44,506,000. Overall, we would expect revenue to decrease by about $4.3 million.
You have a statement here, the preparation for expenditures would provide for curricular and instructional changes in fiscal year 14. Expansion of problem-based learning and more individualized instruction with the possible reconfiguration of the school schedule. What is that?
Well, it hasn't been laid out yet, but the part of the work of the think tank, which you know you'll hear more specifics from probably in May, later in May. That's certainly one of the things that they're looking at.
Is that, I just want to make sure it was something I did.
You didn't know that. Yeah. And, you know, and speaking of the reorganization of the school day within the parameters of what we currently have, I mean, unless there's a negotiated change in the school day, it would be a change in the schedule based on the current length of day and number of staff we have, et cetera, et cetera. But they've been looking at, you know, really thinking outside the box in terms of how we might meet the needs of individual learners and think differently about grade levels, think differently about monitoring student progress and then developing plans according to that. And so there's a certain amount of money, I mean, the resources that we would apply to that would probably be predominantly curricular. We're also looking at, as part of the Long Range Plan Action Plan, whether or not it would be feasible in 2014 FY14 to implement foreign language, either via a dual language program or a FLEX program within the school day. So those are all things that will be heavy discussions next year as we plan for that two-year forecast.
Mm-hmm. Bob, one thing that struck me, and I ran this by you when we saw each other this morning, is that our policy talks about not presenting a deficit budget, you know, aligning our long-range planning, but not presenting a deficit budget.
That the administration would not present a deficit budget.
Right. So, you know, I think for the record, it's important to recognize what you put in here, which is, you know, the decision to abate impacted those dollars, certainly, which...
we would have a surplus if it wasn't for the abatement.
Right. Right. So I just, I know we're going to, we'll talk about that.
Sure.
Just something that struck me that I made a note to myself to make sure we have on record.
Okay. The following page then is a reconciliation of expenditures from last year to the proposed budget, the preliminary budget for 2013. Again, we adopted a budget with expenditures last year of roughly $45,358,000. And then I've broken down the increases by area. Salaries we expect to increase by about $600,000. Benefits, when we built this budget, we increased by about 8% for medical and 5% for dental. When we come back with the revised budgets, we'll have the actual numbers in those cells.
Mm-hmm.
So we would expect some additional benefit from the reduction in premiums as originally presented. Purchase services went up, but went up rather significantly, primarily for repairs and maintenance on our buildings, transportation. Mike has some technology requests. I do want to comment that all of the recommendations that have either been approved or in the process for board approval, whether that is yes or no, have been included in this preliminary budget. So anything that I had presented, Mike, or so forth, has been built into this budget currently. Supplies and materials went down slightly, direct result of requests from the buildings or the departments. Capital expenditures went up about $268,000 as a result of increased requests for technology, building improvements, and building equipment needs. Overall, we expect our expenditures to go up about $1.7 million for total expenditures of about $47.1 million. Which comes out to a $2.6 million deficit. Again, a direct result of the abatement that was approved in December. Are there any questions so far? Then I would, I guess we would go right into, and I guess we would go right into the page one of the actual budget document itself, which breaks down revenues and expenditures, and then the individually calculated surplus or deficits for each of the funds. That would be preliminary budget fund summary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've already been done.
Okay.
I was kind of, as you were going through the summary, I was just browsing.
You were scanning it out.
You've seen
thinking,
this
well, maybe
I've
I would
seen
have
this before.
So again, if you look over in the far right-hand corner, you're seeing total revenues of about $44.5 million, expenditures of approximately $47.1 million, which creates a deficit of $2.6 million. We've calculated the approximate projected ending cash balances. We then back out the taxes that are expected to be received in the spring of this year for an undesignated fund balance on a cash basis of $7.7 million. The next page we move on to then, this is a spreadsheet that calculates the difference in revenues and expenditures as well as their associated surplus and deficit from last year's final budget to this year's, actually that should say preliminary budget. I missed that. I bet you brought that to my attention. And I so as you can see, these are these various funds. We're talking about a surplus in the education fund, a deficit in the O&M fund, obviously a significant deficit in the bond and interest fund because we aren't levying there. Again, that $2.6 million deficit versus a $579 million surplus projected for this year. Then we run through the next page. There are all the revenues by fund, property taxes, other state and other local revenue, state revenues and federal revenues. As you can see, really, it's not much of a, the federal revenues are not very significant, given about $525,000.
Does that include the increased federal lunch programs?
Yes, as best we know those numbers right now.
Are there any grants that are pending at this point that we have?
I would. No, nothing that I'm aware of.
This year? Yeah, for next
for
year.
For next year, if you'll, we have a in the board packet for this evening. There's a maintenance grant that we're applying for.
I saw that, the $50,000.
We don't know if we're going to receive that or not. Mm-hmm. But when we come back and prepare this or update this budget here, I'll have to allocate $50,000 for that
right,
that proposed yeah. grant if the board approves.
That's
that.
The only one that's kind of sitting out there. Yeah. Okay.
Have you heard reduction in Title II?
Oh, reduction
in
Title II?
No. I've been hearing reduction possibly in Title II as
right.
a federal, if you know things could be different and more taking
yeah.
that money and making it more competitive.
The teacher kind of, quality,
mm-hmm, which is professional development.
Right.
So I mean, I'd say that's pending. We never know exactly what we're going to get in our Title III.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of dependent on each year.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. And so what about IEP? Not anymore, right?
We're not getting
this year.
Yeah.
Said that, yeah.
So, I mean, the grant funds, even the entitlements, are always at risk. I think they're, even with the renewal of NCLB and Title I, what might happen with Title I could look different in the next year or so, you know, mm-hmm. particularly based on race to the top dollars.
Any other comments, Julie? The next page then really is just a pie chart that shows the breakdown of our revenues, 87% property taxes, 6% are the other local revenues, for a total local contribution to the budget of about 93%, state funding at 6%, federal funding at 1%. And then the following, actually three pages here, is a breakdown of all of our objects, which are salaries, benefits, purchase services, supplies, materials, equipment, and then other objects by function. And if you have any questions on those numbers, I'd be happy to answer them. Again, those are estimates at this point in time. And then finally, there is a pie chart that presents the expenditures. Again, about 72% is between salaries and benefits, which is about, it's pretty much the standard in education, somewhere between 65% and 75%. And then the breakdown between purchase services, supplies, materials, equipment, capital projects, and the others. And on the final page of this budget presentation then, again, it shows the reduction in revenue expectations of about $4.3 million, increase in expenditures of about $1.7 million, and the percentages associated with those.
Bob, what's contributing to the purchase of services and capital equipment project?
Purchase services really is we have experienced some significant increases off of transportation, in particular special ed transportation. As you know, we went out to bid last year for regular transportation. That this year's increase is expected to be about 2%. So I would say special education, transportation related costs. And then also, there's a charge that we for homeless transportation, which we didn't even budget for a year ago, and so far this year I've approved $44,000 worth of homeless transportation. And we talked last week or the week before, we think we're going to end up with about $60,000 worth of expenses related to this particular area. So going from nothing to probably $60,000 a year, that's rather significant given overall transportation cost. And again, just the drive being driven as our buildings age, it costs us more every year to for repairs and maintenance, contracted services, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. So the $800,000, what the largest contributor would be, the special ed transportation?
I would say that's a very significant increase. Yeah, $270,000, as well as the increase to homeless transportation. Now, as I said a year ago, that wasn't even a line item on this budget. We're going to move forward. We actually have a line item so we can track that expenditure on a monthly basis.
Is that a state mandate?
Federal law, it's the...
Well, it's a law that we are required to provide transportation to those students that become homeless in the middle of an academic
year. While they're in our district.
No.
Yeah. It just doesn't matter what...
For as long as they're homeless.
As long as they're homeless, we have to provide the transportation, and if they are not living within our boundaries, then we get into a more expensive transportation arrangement, sharing those costs with that other district. Mm-hmm. So you can have a child who started here, they end up living in a shelter.
In Chicago.
And they're entitled to still come to school here, and we have to transport them here. That's federal law. And
part of the law, Drew, is so that while that child is facing, you know, great instability, that mm-hmm. their schooling and education, teachers, friends, etc., stays as stable as possible.
And we do split the cost with the district of residents. The other big expenditure, I mean, I think in terms of our increased number of leases, probably in that purchase services account.
Too,
and
those, what we know now has been built into this measure. Mm-hmm. What either the board has already approved or we're in that review process mm-hmm. now. So that has been included in the budget. Mm-hmm.
You know, another thing in the budget that we're trying to do this year, Bob, that we talked over with the principals, and it's always been kind of the black hole, is sub costs. And we're tracking sub costs, which is not a large sum of money in the end. I mean, when you talk about the total percentage of the budget, but when you talk about the total percentage of the budget, but it's something that we want to monitor more closely, and that is how are subs charged and accounted for teachers who are engaged in professional development. You know, it's easier to track it with its with the sickness. Mm-hmm. But with professional development, a school may use professional development dollars to have subs so that teachers can visit other teachers' classrooms. So this year, every principal has received a line item in their budget to monitor those costs so that we can begin to.
Is that the same as collaboration, or is that on top of?
Could be collaboration. It could be going to a conference. It could be release time within the day to go visit another classroom. It would be anything that we don't pay for in terms of professional development. It's not that much money, but we did think it was a step in the monitoring of even smaller expenses for building that accountability for what we spend and how we spend it.
Just as Bob said, we've always paid for homeless transportation, but what we're doing going into next year's budget is we're scheduled to get those costs so we can actually look at it on a more regular basis, more discreet, more by half.
So it's possible it didn't go from 0 to 60 in 1 year.
I haven't done anything else with Bob. I'm just saying that what we're doing is within our books, we're creating a separate sustainable account to track those.
But we've been paying for it.
We've been paying for it.
For a couple of years now.
Yeah.
Well, as long as we've been legally required to.
Right. So before it was just lumped in with regular transportation, now we've decided to identify it and track it. So it is 7:30.
Thank you.
We'll start our board meeting soon. So if you have any questions, please get them off to me. I'll try to get back to you as quickly as I can. And then again, we're going to be presenting this to the board on May 14th. So. Mm-hmm. Questions, concerns, let me know.
Thank you.
That's one question. In terms of expenditures, are you looking for any prioritization from the board on what expenditures might be more important, or if you didn't do something else?
We haven't asked that, but that's certainly a question, a part of the dialogue that could be raised at the next meeting.
Yeah, I think that's probably on us. And I'm glad you brought it up, because I think we need to be, I'm really glad I was able to come to finance tonight, because I read through the budget. I had that concern about the deficit, presenting a deficit budget based on our policy. Those things we need to think about. We have some large things on the docket, but they're also part of our age and obsolescence and our capital asset plan, too. So some of these are, we need to do them.
If you recall back in November, we presented the board with a big picture of our vision of expenditure priorities. And so if the board wants to, we can resend that out to board members to look at, because that's really, obviously more expenditures than we will possibly have revenues for, when you look at roofs and that sort of things. But it outlines where we have tentatively placed our best guess estimates for costs of our priorities, those that they're outlining in the long range.
I think that would be helpful, because John has brought up a couple times, what's the portfolio? Well, we have that. You've given it to us. I think it might be good to, provide it to us again with that name on it.
It prior to the levy, yes.
Yes, we talked about it.
We've tried to give you the big picture around the long range plan and the long range financial demands that we placed on us, and then we created a two-year budget for you to look at, which just was a two-year budget. But
I think it's helpful also to hear you say, and you reiterated this, Bob, a couple times, and that is everything in this preliminary budget, whether it's approved expenses by the board or ones that are pending, are built in.
That's correct.
Because there's always that question, should we be using this money over here instead or whatever? It's all here. So we see what those raw numbers are now, pending some potential shift, who knows. But I think it's good for the board to know it's all there. And
it's all presented in this budget. The only minor thing
good,
that I've heard out
question.
There is, I just don't know.
Yeah, no, it is. It's good. We
Spanish book production next year,
right,
which is a result of District 87 changing.
Right. We've got to get ahead of the conversation.
So, yeah. Other than that, everything that's come from the departments or the buildings has been incorporated into the preliminary budget.
Right, yeah, we need to reiterate that.
The only odd items that are going on out there right now, really, I think, is state revenue. Or what are the expectations regarding that?
Mm-hmm.
So, any updates that we have, we'll, of course, incorporate those into this next presentation. If we hear something between now and the next board meeting in May, we would might make some changes at that time, but, of course, would be incorporated in June. So, thank you.